Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Justice.
Welcome to Cultural Fugazi, an optimistic take on the culture of the end times. Today, we're going to talk about RoboCop.
Correct, Chris. Our planning for this episode went, we should watch RoboCop. So we watched RoboCop. I know we said, hey, we were going to try to tell people what we were going to talk about. If we could, we could not, because we did not know we were going to talk about RoboCop until we said, we're going to talk about RoboCop.
Yeah, and I think before we sat down and watched it, like, we think that this probably has things to say. I remember it being something that had things to say. Justice, does it have things to say? What?
Sweet, sweet, innocent us. Imagine forgetting about RoboCop. Yeah, so we put together a couple talking points about RoboCop, specifically as it relates to kind of what we're trying to do here. So we will start with our thesis, which I'm doing today. Chris wrote it, so blame him. RoboCop as a movie has important things to say about culture and society that are just as relevant now as they were in 1987, if not even more so.
Mm.
I know, very gutsy thesis statement, Chris. I like it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
You know, to kind of summarize that up into a point that we can chew on for a little bit, RoboCop's still relevant. Not that RoboCop ever was not relevant, but even now, today, 2023, February, there's still something in RoboCop that's worthwhile for people to go back and watch, not just fun action scenes and a pretty good science fiction movie about a robotic police officer. But there's something that it has to say at the time that it said it that is just as important today as it was in 1987.
Yeah, I think there was a point earlier last week where I sat down and was like, oh, I'm gonna go ahead and throw RoboCop on. You know, I'm still kind of like finishing my day up. I'm still sort of doing other things. But I can start the movie and, you know, I'll get into it. I'll take some notes. It'll be fine. And I put it on. And I think I told you, Justice, I immediately, after like the first 2 minutes, shut it off and went, nope, this is actually very relevant. I need to stop because I'm going to need to take notes.
Yeah, Chris, the part that's really hard to get over with RoboCop, the reason it's still relevant is because you are so grounded immediately in what RoboCop wants you to know and the state of the world that RoboCop lives in. So it is impossible to ignore the politics of RoboCop because the first thing you are exposed to in RoboCop, other than the city of Detroit and a giant banner that says RoboCop, and let's take for granted that saying the word cop or police officer implies some sort of politics, the leading commercial montage for the film is the most 1987 politics that I think I've seen outside of like a blast from the past newscast. It's we start off with, you know, the state of the world of RoboCop is what? It is that the Star Wars satellite that was an idea, you know, around the Cold War on how they would stop nuclear missiles from launching in the Cold War is real, and we did a shitty job, right?
Right.
The federal government built the thing, and it fucking sucks, you know? And I'm going to say fuck as often as I can in tribute to RoboCop throughout the podcast today.
Appropriate.
Yeah. I was expecting you to say fuck.
Oh. What the fuck?
Damn it, Chris. So, you find out about the Star Wars space satellite. It's real. It's there. And it sucks. And you get nuclear war escalation in Africa. You get that heart transplants are happening. You can get the sports model from Yamaha, you know, which really, when you think about Made in America, right? Like, it's a direct target against American manufacturing to specifically say, hey, heart transplants, get the Yamaha sports brand model, right? The cars are all very Japanese influenced, and it really, really, really wants you to ground yourself in what a future state could be. Not, it ain't no Blade Runner, right? We're not doing right. that. We're not living in that post-apocalyptic future. We are living in a future of now.
Yeah, you get presented with the world is scary and dangerous. The government cannot fix it. The government is not helping. Also, globalization can bring you products that are going to take the place of medicine, and you better have money to pay for it, because otherwise, you're not getting this branded heart. Which, Justice, I don't know if that sort of rings some very alarming bells in your brain about similar ways that the world feels right now.
Yeah, I mean, one of the key points, we'll get to this later, that RoboCop does is it really talks about, I want to do a thing. I want to play a game, Chris. The game that I would like to play is, what is RoboCop about? Oh, and then we can talk. And then we can talk about what RoboCop is about.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is, on the count of three, I'll go 1, 2, 3, and then we'll say what RoboCop is about. We did not do this beforehand. This is not planned. I did say, hey, I'm curious on what you think RoboCop is about, but don't tell me. So at the count of three, we're going to say what RoboCop is about at the same time and see if we agree.
Yes.
Okay. All right. 1, 2, 3,
the
capitalism.
Violent mechanization of humanity under capitalism.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, we're close.
I just added some words.
You put some words in front of capitalism, right?
Yeah.
Because whenever we were kind of obviously talking a little bit about RoboCop, the thing that you and I both did not say once I said, hey, well, let's play a game of what RoboCop is about, is capitalism, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I think I even specifically, when we were talking, like, we started to talk about something that was related to capitalism, and I'm like, well, this will be about a theme that I'm sure we'll discuss.
Yeah, we don't have to say it. Yeah. We don't have to say it out loud. But RoboCop really does, right? In 1987, RoboCop as a film really wants you to know that this is a movie about the mechanizations of capitalism, what capitalism can do when left unchecked, specifically where we do see capitalism encroaching on our daily lives with privatized things like privatized insurance, privatized prisons. You know, I have a quote here that I want to get into later that's literally everything, you know, everything that's in here. And it's like, yep. Oh, of course. But really, RoboCop drives home every part of the thing. Of course, Star Wars is shitty. It was built, you know, it wasn't built by NASA, right? It's a private enterprise, and they're going to do a shitty job. Where at least NASA got people to the moon. They only fucked it up once or twice, three times. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's a thing that we will get into when we start to talk a little bit about how the contracting and the robots work later on. But yeah, there's very clearly, hey, the corporations are using this as a vehicle for, it's a cash cow. It's disaster capitalism. It is using the scenarios, it's using the fear, it's using all of that as a vehicle to create profit. And like that initial opening of RoboCop, like you said, it's so important because, like we like to do here on Cultura Fugazi, it gives you the thesis statement from the beginning. It's like, this is RoboCop, and this is what RoboCop is about.
It's really funny to me because there's so many people who I know, I can imagine, let's not use the word no, I can imagine people disagreeing with the themes presented in RoboCop that can watch RoboCop and go, that's fucking rad, right?
Yes.
Like, it's obviously designed, and we'll come back to this in our recommendations of other things, and we can talk about that theme a little bit more towards the end, but RoboCop wears what it is on his robotic sleeve. Right? This is a movie about capitalism. We're going to be talking about labor exploitation on multiple forms. There's a conversation maybe we will or won't have about police unions and are they labor? And specifically how their union is treated and how their union works and what it means. But even outside of those ideas, right, there's a sentence in one of the boardroom conversations and I wrote this sentence down. I did not pull this up from the internet. It was said out loud, and I wrote it down. And it was, they were talking about why they are privatizing, why OCP, the company, and RoboCop has taken over the Detroit Police Department. And it is, we have gambled and markets traditionally regarded as nonprofit. Hospitals, prisons, space exploration, and now police. And when you hear that out loud in RoboCop, the movie about why gambling, you know, it's not, they did not use the term, we are generating profits and we are gambling, right? We are gambling with your health. We are gambling with your incarceration. We are now owning your, you know, we now own the people who can put you into those incarcerated, you know, those incarceration systems, right? And space exploration, space exploration. And in 1987, privatizing space exploration sounded fucking crazy. Right? That sounded fucking insane. Now, year of our Lord 2023, how the fuck else are you going to get to space, dude?
Well, and it's fun because we are seeing in 2023 the ways in which there are limitations to how much private industry can... There are ways in which if you're doing a thing for the public good, it is easier to do it right and to do it well. If profit is your motive, then sometimes it's not going to be profitable to make sure everyone makes it to space safely. That's just not going to be the number one priority. And this is another scene later on in the boardroom where they're talking about the Ed 209 units, which we will discuss in great deal, I'm sure. But talking about how I can't believe that you attempted to undercut me with this Ed 209 thing. Don't you know how much money we could have made on replacement parts? These things will break down constantly, and we could have had a veritable cash cow of profits, which is essentially, we don't need them to actually work. We don't need them to actually keep people safe. We just need someone to buy them. That's it. That's all that matters. And for privatized spaceflight, it doesn't matter if it works if someone's paying the bill.
I've seen what Tesla owners eventually think about Teslas. Kind of doesn't matter if it works. Sorry if you were listening to this and driving a Tesla right now. If you're driving one, can I recommend the new Ford Mustang E's?
Yeah, sure.
They seem nice.
Yeah, yeah.
They seem nice.
Yeah. If you don't need anything fancy... My Leaf is nice.
Chris drives a Leaf.
Yeah.
So
that thing's going to run forever. I'm not worried about Elon Musk's poor quality control, meaning that I'm going to be stuck. Anyway.
We digress. Couple things to get back to with the points in RoboCop, the politics of its time. If you have not seen RoboCop, quick overview of what a RoboCop is. RoboCop is a man named Alex Murphy who is eventually exploded into liquid goo on the job via shotguns and turned into a robotic police officer. Eventually, that's done by a private company called OCP, which is Omnicorp.
Yeah.
Again, generic sci-fi corporate name. You don't have to stretch it far, sure. Yeah. You are given perspective into Omnicorp by a couple boardroom conversations and what it means to work in a company like Omnicorp, which I think are some of the most important action scenes in the film. Chris and I were trying to name all the action scenes, and I believe the boardroom meetings are action scenes. Amount of people die.
I do remember saying, wait, are we counting the boardroom scene? You're like, not for what we're talking about right now, but yes.
Yes, it is an action scene, but it was not for that point.
Yes.
But... and you are given perspective to the mechanizations that produced RoboCop, right? The lead up, everything in those commercial segments, everything in that initial boardroom meeting that include that the Ed 209 unit, which is a large scale, scary military giant drone with Gatling guns. And that's supposed to be Omnicorp's future security cop drone. It also, every time it's on screen, yells like a panther?
Yeah, it growls. It is this is something that another thing that that Justice and I did, not necessarily as part of our preparation, but like sort of out of curiosity, we watched the newer, the 2014 RoboCop. And one of the things that I did note that I think is an interesting distinction, and I think an important misstep, is in the new version, the ED-209 units are very sleek. They have like sci-fi whirring noises. In RoboCop, they sound like animals. They sound like dogs. They growl at you. They bark at you. There's like a very like frightening, visceral, like, oh no, this is, you're in the jungle and this is a predator that is going to eat you kind of vibe.
Yeah. So that is Omnicorp's approach to policing, right? It's what they're trying to pitch to the Detroit Police Department, the entire movie set in the city of Detroit, which in the 1980s was not a great place to be. We would know this as people of Cleveland. Yeah, sure. Seems right. Like I said, Alex Murphy, who is played by Peter Weller, gets turned into goo, then gets turned into RoboCop. And there's a couple things that lead into that where they talk about the police force in Detroit, its current status. You know, a lot of cops are dying and something does have to change. Something has to give. And one of the primary points that they bring up is that, hey, we're a union. We should go on strike.
Yeah, and I love that. So you get this locker room scene where they're talking about everything has become incredibly violent. You know, the police force doesn't have the resources that it needs to do the job that they want to do. They feel like they're outclassed. They feel like they're outgunned. And they're talking about, you know, we're not getting the help that we need. We need to do something about this. We need to. And a brilliant thing that the movie does is the moment that somebody says the word strike, everything goes silent. Silence. It's like you can hear a pin drop after that word gets uttered.
Yeah, and the reason they don't go on strike, the police chief hears them talking about a strike. Remember, these are now privately employed individuals. They now work for a company. They feel like they're working for the city of Detroit. They are not. They are working for Omnicorp. They are owned, you know, their paychecks are coming from Omnicorp, not really from taxpayer dollars, unless they're going to the company, which is then coming back to them. So who are they working for? Anyway, they do not go on strike because their police chief says, quote, "We are not plumbers. Cops don't go on strike."
Yeah.
I think I wrote down as soon as I heard that, two things. Are cops labor?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't want to talk about. I don't want to.
That's a very, very complicated. It's a complicated question. I think it's particularly complicated based on how things have progressed over the decades. It was still complicated in the 80s. It is even more complicated now.
And I would say, for the sake of RoboCop, let's take RoboCop's privatized police force. They're less civil servants at that point in time than they are private enterprise. But, you know, it's hairier than that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cops, you know, their argument is cops don't get days off. You know, they the one thing I would say RoboCop is compelling in what it does and does not do.
Mm-hmm.
These police officers aren't really glorified. They are treated as individuals who do a job, and they are struggling to get that job done because of the things that are happening around them, right? I will say it does a pretty compelling narrative there, while also knowing a little bit more about the politics. You know, as RoboCop continues to feed you its politics, it's asking that question kind of for a reason and leaving that up for you to interpret later on. But yeah, they single-handedly disarm their entire union immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I think you do get a sense of the police still seeing themselves in this movie as public servants. And I think as part of that, part of the source of the reason that they want to strike is feeling that they are not able to serve the public effectively. which like that throws some interesting nuance on the idea of like how do police function in society and how do they function when, as you pointed out, they're technically no longer public servants. Like now there are corporations at play and this is a different relationship.
We see that today in the year of our Lord 2023 inside of prisons, right? That very system exists. You can turn around and find it wherever prisons are sold. So like it is obviously still incredibly relevant, incredibly complicated issue for you to spend time thinking about in your little brain noggin. So
yeah. So I think that is an interesting question. And I do think that the question about whether they are labor for the sake of our conversation, we can temporarily set that to the side.
Yes, we shall set that to the side.
Yeah. So know that we have thoughts that maybe we'll get to someday.
Yeah. There's probably a really good selection of movies that we could watch that deal with that, where we could throw RoboCop back on the pile.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to let RoboCop shy away from it, because that's one of the third scenes that you get is the cops having this very specific conversation.
Well, and I think, you know, aside from whether or not you'd consider cops labor, what it does do, again, is it is like just right at the get-go, putting in your face, this is a movie about capital. We are talking about labor. Like, regardless of your feelings, this movie has to do with corporations, labor, the relationship between those things.
One of my other favorite quotes is the bad guys, right? So the bad guys show up, they burn all the money, they fuck everything up, and they go back, and before Alex Murphy is killed, the bad guys are talking about what they're going to do with all the stolen money. And the one, there's two bad guys, it's Emil, and I don't know if it's... The bad guy names are...
Boddicker?
It's not Boddicker, because Emil's the Emil's the number two, and I think it's like...
The two that are actually sitting and watching TV together.
The other guy is not one of the main named bad guys. There's Emil, Boddicker, Leon Nash, played by Ray Wise. Leon Nash is just good. And Joey Cox, other bad guy, named bad guy, first and last name, like, golden. And we should talk about them a little bit. They seem fun. Like, they're bad guys. They're really bad guys. But also, like, they have a relationship. We get that later whenever they get, like, the big, giant guns.
They do.
And they, like, all these guys like each other.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Right. I mean, even before that, I think you get some of that. And the chasing in the car, you get some of that when we see them in their hideout. Just hanging out, watching some TV together.
Yeah. They obviously...
After heisting.
Yeah, after stealing a bunch of stuff. Like, maybe they're just the guys they hang out with on weekends, but, like, they hang out.
Right, yeah.
You know? But he's talking about what they do with the money, and he's like, why don't we ever spend any of the money? And he goes, we steal money, we buy Coke, we sell Coke, and we make more money. And, like, you know, it's driving the bad guys. It's driving the boardroom. You know, they're not doing a lot with it. They're not stealing money to spend money. They're stealing money to make more money.
Yes. Well, and it's fascinating because you do get the sense that basically the description that is happening there is we're going to set up a corporation, a criminal enterprise that is going to function the same way that a hypothetically lawful corporation does. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to have a product. We're going to market that product. We're going to sell that product. That is the way that you interact with the world.
Well, then he says, and this is my the other direct thing that I wrote down. So they steal money to buy Coke, to sell Coke, to make more money. And the guy's like, well, shit. That seems weird. Shouldn't we be spending the money? And, or, you know, just selling shit. How the fuck does that work? And he goes, ain't no better way to steal money than free enterprise.
Yep. Like, there it is.
RoboCop wants you to be thinking about capitalism the whole time.
We are once again in the realm of subtlety being for cowards.
Exactly. We're about due for our first break, so we'll be right back. welcome back to Cultural Fugazi. We're still talking about RoboCop.
Yeah, RoboCop still has things to say.
And we still have things to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
We've also switched our wine selection. We've moved on from a red blend into a Pinot Noir.
Ooh.
It's exciting. Couple of things to get out of the way really fast, because I adore this about RoboCop. We talked a little bit about in the masculinity part two of dialogue in Mad Max Fury Road. And I said, the dialogue really pushes that movie forward and what it's trying to accomplish by making a bunch of nonsense seem like words. Gas town.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, they're going to gas town. That's where the gas is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
RoboCop. And I've said fuck a couple times. Man, it really turns the word fuck into art. It's still the word fuck, but it's artistic in its usage, right? So I cannot believe... We'll talk about the legacy of RoboCop and what RoboCop turned into later.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do need to get to Sting being saved by RoboCop in WCW. But somehow, when that happens, no one says the word fuck anywhere near Sting. But
it's very weird.
In RoboCop, the only... Like, there's three words. Fuck and RoboCop. Like, that's it. The thing that
There is, you know, Justice, we used to just call people assholes.
We used to just call people assholes. You're right. But one of the things I wrote down is the when the city councilman comes back, asks for a recount, says, I don't care what the fuck the results are. I just want my job back. He's being asked for his demands, right? So he's holding the rest of city council hostage. This is 1987, so the idea of terrorism exists. You know, terrorism has always existed, but like the idea of terrorists, very much a 50s, 60s creation. I don't know. Maybe that's a different different conversation we can
have. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you are dealing with terrorism is often something that does not happen at home. When it does, it is this yeah, we're. Terrorism functions in a much different way in the 80s than it does today.
Yeah, let's say everything post-2001 has a different idea of what terrorism is.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's use that as the jumping off point. So, you know, they don't negotiate with terrorists, yada, yada, yada. City councilman has everyone hostage, and his list of demands are, first thing first, don't fuck with me. It's the first thing he wants,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I gotta admit, pretty good. Pretty good. One of the other things he asks, like I said, he asks for a recount. He asks for his old job back. Regardless of the outcome, I want my old job back. Whenever he asks for the recount, which...
mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That hits a little different these days.
It's a very easy playbook to call from.
Mm-hmm.
The way that that playbook is utilized today is very different, because now it is about removing trust from systems. It's about kind of breaking apart the process and saying, you know, you can't trust these people, you can't trust this thing, because obviously if you voted for me, you're right and we're right, so fuck it. Where in RoboCop, I don't give a shit. Fuck them. I just want my job back. And, oh, I love it. It's so good. The other thing he wants is, I want a fast car that gets really shitty gas mileage.
Yep. Yep. It's, so part of our thesis had to do with this movie having important things to say for today. Maybe even more so than 1987. And if this particular scene does not, like, hammer home that point brilliantly, I don't know what else does.
Oh, I love it so much. I, like, literally every part of that scene brings me joy. I'm gonna blow his fucking brains out, and then RoboCop shows up and just pulls him out of a wall, and he goes, whoa! Like, Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I walked away from that realizing that the reason some of that works as a joke is also because it's small town politics in a big city, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a city election. Of course, city politicians are corrupt. Fuck, we live in Cleveland. We know this. I have an energy bill
Justice,
for you?
I don't know what you're talking about. The politics here have always been pristine.
Nothing bad has ever happened. Right? Yeah. I have an energy bill for you if you want to talk about corrupt small town politicians.
And I used to work for Metro Health, where right before I started, they had to arrest a buddy who used to work there as their CEO for reasons. Sometimes things happen.
Yeah. What is interesting now, looking at it now, is that that is no longer small town politics.
This movie is doing a thing where it is using small town politics to elucidate a larger point about politics in general. And I think, in particular, we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording. Once you get out of the 80s and you move into the 90s, things get better for a lot of people in a way that allows them to ignore a lot of what's happening around them. And in the 80s, there was less of an ability to ignore things. And so politics was corrupt. There was a lot of corruption on a bunch of different levels in the 80s. And there were a lot of people who saw that and did things like make RoboCop to try to point that out. And I think you have a very interesting parallel between the 80s and now in that, just like you couldn't ignore the corruption in the 80s, you can't ignore the corruption today either. We are back in a position where it is impossible to pretend that, well, now we can all just do the American dream and not worry about corruption. It's fine now. We solved it. It's good. Don't worry about it. Can't do that anymore. And in RoboCop, it is very clear that this is how politics works and everybody knows it. And today, this is how politics works and everybody knows it.
Yeah. You know, Chris, when you put it like that, I take back everything I said. Which was not my point, but also, you know, that way I cover my ass.
That's just a really great way to get into a conversation about how...
I was just waiting for you to talk and then immediately you know what, actually...
Yeah. Yes, politics has always been bad.
You know what, Chris? You're right, and that's why Detroit's good. You know, I've spent time... Here's a question. Have you spent time in Detroit? Have you been to Detroit before?
I have, yes. Usually for music reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Which is unsurprising.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because concerts don't come to Cleveland.
Not anymore, they don't.
Not anymore. They either go to Chicago. Sometimes they stop in Detroit. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky, they stop in Cleveland. Then they either move on to Pittsburgh or Columbus.
Yep. Sometimes Philly. Sometimes they even skip Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh tends to get most of that stuff.
You can stop there and make money on your way to Philly.
Yes.
So I was curious. I went one time. I saw both a Lions game and a Tigers game while I was there. And I will say, of all the teams referenced in RoboCop, I think this has more to say about 1987 than it does anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of your status with the Detroit Lions or the Detroit Tigers or the Detroit Pistons, right? Our main bad guy,
Boddicker.
Boddicker. Let me get his first name because his first name is also good.
It is.
His first name is Clarence.
Clarence.
Yeah, it's Clarence. Yes.
Yeah.
Played by Kurtwood Smith.
Who is a phenomenal actor.
Yeah. Let's get this out of the way really fast. I want to go through this too. Then we'll get back to my point about baseball. Kurtwood Smith plays the main bad guy. He comes back in RoboCop 2 as a brain in a jar.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Miguel Ferrer? I don't know, known 80s smoopy bad businessman. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Like just smarmy business guy. Does a great job of just being on coke. throughout this entire movie.
Yeah.
Man, we should talk about cocaine. Anyway, Ray Wise is Leon Nash. I talked about Leon Nash and Joey Cox. Joey Cox played by Jesse Goines. Emil. I also earlier this week said Seinfeld instead of Seinfeld. If you want to know how well I'm doing with reading words and saying exactly what they say.
No, that's just the AI version. Yeah. So it's fine.
Played by Paul McCrane. So it's kind of like a who's who of 80s TV bad guys.
A lot of those folks who went on to either continue to do interesting stuff in TV or branch out into some film stuff, like they all did. They're good character actors, those folks.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So the guy who plays the businessman who produces RoboCop is also like, he's in like fucking Richie Rich, or like he plays like...
He's been in a bunch of stuff.
He's in kid stuff. He's in all kinds of stuff playing smarmy, coked up business guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which like, man.
Yeah.
Have a job. You know, like have an outlet. Like, what's your job? I don't know. I look like I do coke. So, anyway, back to baseball. So in RoboCop, Clarence, our primary bad guy, is about to be arrested by, he's about to get in a shootout with the other guy who's moving in to sell coke, or the guy who's trying to buy coke from.
Yes. It's the coke kingpin.
Yes. Right. It's Mr. Coke. And he specifically says, I don't know if you know this, but the Tigers play tonight and I've never missed a game, whenever he pulls his gun out at Mr. Coke, the coke dealer. And
yeah, like things start off where Boddicker is like, hey, we basically want to take your business from you. Like we want to do this thing. And Mr. Coke is like, excuse me. I am Mr. Coke.
Right.
You come into my house in my city?
Well, we've also talked about, Enterprise, right? There's multiple people. It happens in the drug business and it happens in the boardroom, both. It's, a nice mirrored parallel story where moving in on someone's turf has ramifications that actually in both instances result in death. So anyway, they pull out guns, they talk about baseball, which that caught my ears as someone who likes baseball. And he's not obsessed with the Lions. He's not obsessed with the Pistons. The man has never missed a Tigers game, which I don't know if that means he has season ticket. Like what's the status of that? He listens to it on the radio, like when he's in the car.
Justice, do you know anything about like, were they decent in the '80s? I have literally no idea.
I feel
like they weren't great for a while, but I know nothing about.
I could tell you more about Pittsburgh and Cleveland, Anyway, it just says a lot more about 1987 than it does today. I would feel like...
Is that one of the few things that perhaps does not translate as much?
I would say the movie Drive does a really good job with basketball. Where the crime that happens, the first crime that happens in the film has to deal with an escape scene where a basketball game lets out. Mm-hmm. And like, and I actually think that says a lot more about the time that the movie is made in and the city that it's made around. So I don't know. I feel like the people that I know. Oh, fuck. Hockey. Right. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I forgot the Red Wings because they're. I can't.
A lot of people have that reaction to the Red Wings. It's okay. It's okay.
So 2014's RoboCop
mm-hmm.
does stuff with hockey. They utilize the Red Wings as like a primary source of Detroitness, which mm-hmm. is correct. That is the most correct thing about that and about all of 2014's RoboCop.
Well, yeah, especially in 2014. Although I don't know. I feel like they were
totally
okay. Great.
A million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like they were good then. Yeah. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. For sure.
Okay.
But yeah, so like, it's interesting thoughts on the state of the world where I feel like RoboCop does a lot of things that it gets right and it gets correct. No one has gone out of their ways to figure out, you know, out of their time to figure out when the fuck the Tigers play. I went to a Tigers game. That ballpark's kind of fucking weird.
Although, is that maybe like part of the point of that scene? Like, now that we're talking about it, I'm like, is he just like saying one of the least like decent reasons not to like be in a shootout? Like, is
there's 152 baseball games played by a professional team every year. So the Detroit Tigers will play 152 games. So yes, by saying a baseball team, it is already facetious, right?
Yeah.
It is, I never miss a game.
We're establishing that this person is
it
insane.
It means he must not commit any fucking robberies in the summer. Like, that dude's busy. Not a game? Fuck.
They're very efficient at robbing.
Just like, shit, we gotta be done by 7:10. No, oh no, we started in May. We gotta be done by 6:10. Shit.
That is ridiculous. It's a great line, though.
Oh, I love it. So many good quotes out of this movie. You know, dead or alive, you're coming with me. Like, the use of science fiction, you know, your, why can't I think of the name? Your Flash Gordon equivalent, right?
Oh,
The gun spinning is a, you know, a thing for his son.
Yes.
And all of that, like, just all of that stuff building, you know, that's why he seems cowboy-esque is not because it's like, hey, RoboCop is cool because RoboCop is a cowboy. RoboCop is cool because he watched enough shit that his son thinks he should be a cowboy kind of cop.
Yes.
So that's why he practices gun twirling and dumb one-liners, right?
Well, and so many fascinating nods to that sort of, and like this gets back to some degree to our conversation about masculinity and how that is portrayed. You have somebody who is looking towards a character from a TV show that their son loves to enact masculinity in order to impress their son because they want to be a good masculine role model. Like, okay, all right.
We do have a female cop, and there's some stuff that RoboCop does with male and female cops.
Yeah, do you want to talk about the intro to Lewis?
So the intro to Lewis is, but the lead into, is it before we see Lewis, we get the locker room scene, or is
it? Yes, we get locker room first,
yep.
And then he comes out of the locker room, Murphy, I don't think is there for the locker room scene, and then like he shows up, he's like, hey, I'm here. What are we doing? And then you get the scene where, hey, a couple of cops are bringing a perp in.
Well, the locker room scene, I think, really establishes what it means between male and female cops in this universe, which is they share a locker room.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you see tits.
And butts.
And butts.
Man butts, specifically.
But we still don't see dick. Like,
look, the 80s pushed the line.
Well, we talked about this in the masculinity episode, too. It's harder to show dick than it is kind of anything else.
This movie already got a bunch of business for pushing the envelope in a lot of ways. So, like, if they had gone that far, NC-17, Kiss of Death, never would have happened.
Right. So that we never would have gotten a cartoon show of a movie that shows a dick. Which really, eventually, at some point in time, we have to talk about, like, cable television. Anyway. I digress. So we get the locker room scene. It sets up what the expectations are between men and women in this world with cops. And I don't know if that's true today. I don't think it is. Based on arbitrary knowledge, I imagine that if I was anyone who had to work with anyone professionally, I would especially, just for my own sanity, have a separate locker room. Seems like an HR nightmare.
I mean, I think for that reason alone, that is not a thing that happens today.
So we see that they're treated semi-equal through this poor, piss-poor attempt at it by showing tits in a locker room.
That is the same scene that we get the conversation about striking and that solidarity, which I think is part of the reason that you have everybody there is to make it clear that this is a conversation that is happening amongst it's men and women. It's black cops. It's white cops. I think you do see a Latinx cop somewhere.
I believe so.
So, like, I think a lot of the purpose of that scene is to, I mean, part of it is
to show tits.
It's the 80s.
It's to show tits.
Hello.
Yeah.
But I do think that part of that scene is also to show, you know, these are the foot soldiers who are all on the same level and on the same page, roughly.
So then we get through that. Then we get through, you know, that scene sets up an expectation, whether or not it's useful. But we then see our veteran female cop who's going to show Alex Murphy the ropes.
Here's your new partner.
And that relationship's cool. I don't know what we're supposed to get out of it as, like, let's remove everything. Let's take the things that we've talked about and set them aside. That relationship, whenever Alex Murphy loses his wife and his son, has become a man again from being a RoboCop to being a normal cop. And the only person he can rely on is his partner. There wasn't much there for me to latch on to as a relationship goes, but she is a interesting and competent character for the most part, as far as like female co-action leads go.
Yeah. They take a lot of shortcuts, I think, with that relationship, which I would have to say is probably largely due to, hey, you don't have a lot of time in this movie to do much else. There are probably some ways that they could have really made that relationship more impactful. And I think part of what they try to do, like right from the get-go, is look on even their first day, look at the rapport these two have. And it's fine. And I think particularly like in 80s movies and the way that 80s cop tropes worked, like that relationship feels like it fits that mold enough that like they were probably relying on that shortcutting to do a lot of the heavy lifting. And I think, hey, a lot of the movie does, I think, really speak to things that are going on today in very effective ways. I think that's an area where the shortcutting does do a bit of a disservice and maybe did work better in the 80s than it does now. But I will say that first scene that we see her with, there is very clearly like an immediate inversion of your gendered roles where you've got this woman who comes in... Another cop with her and the perp gets the crap kicked out of him. Like just he just gets annihilated. And she comes in and destroys this guy. Like just absolutely owns him. And like very much a display of power, very much a display of like I am being assertive here. I am the one who is in control. And then like she continues that control when she's bringing Murphy out to the car and she's like, I'm going to drive. She's like, usually I drive on the first, my first day on an assignment. It's like, not this time. Like now you don't get to be in control. This person is in control.
Yeah. But then Murphy still takes the wheel.
Yeah.
Which is how we know that RoboCop and Alex Murphy are the same person, because every time he pulls out of there, he skids the back bumper, which is like, there's so many smart little things. And RoboCop, which is like not that that's not obvious. That would be like a TikTok of like 10 things you didn't realize about RoboCop. I didn't do a good job of the TikTok voice. I would have to try that again. I need to spend more time with the TikTok voice. But, you know, that's our lead in to this is how Alex Murphy drives, not how everyone else drives. So that whenever we see RoboCop do that later, we go, oh, fuck, that's Alex Murphy. Yeah, that relationship... I'm trying to find the words here. It holds up, but I question the relationship. Like, it kind of seems like maybe that's kind of like a will they, won't they scenario once his wife's gone. But like, the dudes, hard. There's so much to. '80s.
Did you see the scene where he has to adjust his aim, Justice?
Yeah, I know.
Did you see the scene?
I know.
Like, hey, help me aim my gun at this baby food. I mean,
you know, you're right. When you put it like that, you're right. I'm just saying, like, especially for what is happening in that movie, that's probably what I would call the weakest part.
Yeah, I would very much agree. And I think there's the movie is doing so much work to hammer home effectively a lot of the substance around the critique of capitalism that I think some of this other stuff that, like, is tangential to that critique doesn't necessarily get as much room to breathe. And so it doesn't get dealt with as thoroughly or as effectively. I think even the stuff with his wife, I think there's a bunch of stuff going on there too that is interesting and has to do with the role of, like, masculinity and being a provider under capitalism that, like, it works to, like, do more to, like, make that foundation of capitalism bad, you are a machine under capitalism thing work, but it doesn't do as much to make us really believe the relationship that he has with his wife and his son. Like, that stuff just doesn't work as well for character arc as it does for the capitalism is bad message.
I think, and do with that information what you will, I think the most we see of Alex Murphy's wife is they have a son and their son is older and they still get down, right? Like that's what we know about their relationship, which seems like it's probably good. It seems really hard whenever she moves on. He has a hard time adapting to the house. Also, you know, her husband is dead and she has to move on. They leave things in the house that normally would have been taken. It looks like the house is in ruin. It looks like things have been caught on fire. I don't know if that's the state of Detroit, but this looks like a nice suburb. It's hard to read into what's actually happening in that scene. It's hard for me to come away with that knowing what the status of Alex Murphy's family is at the end of his reawakening and rediscovering who he is as a person. 2014's RoboCop movie is obsessed with that fucking idea. So if you want to spend a lot of time dealing with what it means for a man to become a robot, they made a whole bad movie for you. And I don't use that lightly. You know, everything has good traits, and I think there's something 2014's RoboCop could say about drone warfare, and it tries to. Samuel L. Jackson specifically tries very hard to say something about the way that the modern news conglomerate works in 2014.
There are some seeds planted in that movie that perhaps they did not water or nurture into fully formed ideas.
There's something there, but there's not enough of it there worth seeking out. Comparing that to RoboCop 2... Or RoboCop, don't watch RoboCop 3. Don't. But comparing RoboCop 2 and RoboCop 2014, of which one has more to say about RoboCop? I don't know. 2014 at least has something to say about what it is if you or I became, well, not you or I, but if a cop became a RoboCop. And what it means for that man. RoboCop has something to say about what it means to create a RoboCop and the world that leads into creating a RoboCop that 2014's RoboCop couldn't even think about, like, sniffing at.
Well, and so, like, I think to get back to the scene in the house where RoboCop is, like, examining his previous life and the charred pictures and remains of what he had at some point with his wife and his child, like, a lot of that is in service of, this is, hey, capitalism is going to turn you into a machine, and we're going to take that literally here. This officer has been turned into a machine to do a job for capital. And what that means is that everything that this person thought that they were going to have access to, the promise of the nuclear family, the wife, the child, the house in the suburbs, all of that ultimately gets taken from you because capitalism might suggest it's possible, but you never actually get the thing under capitalism. So ultimately, like, all of this is in service of demonstrating the ways in which capitalism turns you into a machine and the way in which, like, becoming a machine prevents you from being able to actually have that relationship with your wife and have that relationship with your child. And that becomes more of a dream. It becomes more of a fantasy, a memory that you can't actually have. You don't get that under capitalism. You get turned into a robot cop.
One of the other things that happens a lot in RoboCop is this concept of workplace negligence. It is a reoccurring theme. I don't know if it's because it requires workplace negligence to exist or because it happens more often than not. But specifically, the scientist, whenever RoboCop has his dream that allows him to reawaken, right? Specifically, his dream, right? Again, fucking for cowards.
Well, hey,
RoboCop literally has the dream of the nuclear family, and that's how he becomes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But let's start with workplace negligence numero uno in this movie. Like, hey, we're going to demonstrate a thing at this board meeting. We're going to invite this lowly developer for the first time to a meeting with the board. And what happens to this poor guy who's like, oh, just wave a gun in front of Ed 209. It will demonstrate how effective it is at disarming a human. Like, oh, okay. And then puts the gun down and immediately is violently murdered in the boardroom. Violently murdered in a murder that, by the way, destroys the Delta City, that whole thing, which...
Yeah, hey. he's not just murdered, he's turned into jelly.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
There's a couple other scenes that I want to get to and a couple other things I want to talk about. So we will take a quick break and we will be right back.
And we are back to talk a bit more about RoboCop. And Justice, how's capitalism about workplaces?
So we talked a little bit about, you know, hey, the negligence, the work negligence thing. And I brought that up and we talked a little bit about what it meant in the boardroom.
But we
see that played out a little bit on the individual level. Well, let's not say a little bit. Let's say mostly on the individual level. Primarily with intellectuals, actually, is what RoboCop really wants to talk about as it pertains to laziness on the job. There are several scenes where people are straight up negligent on the job. It's the boardroom where the boardroom member gets shot by a giant robot.
Almost anytime we see white coats, you should probably be concerned.
Yeah. Ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually anytime we see any sort of electronics or complicated math is when we need to be concerned. The other time is in Murphy's lab, his Fortress of Solitude. I don't know what the fuck you would call that.
The weird like cage, but
his
cage.
His cop cage.
Yeah.
It's the thing Darth Vader comes out of, right? Like it's that. Yeah. For RoboCop.
Yes.
So, which I think eventually is a really interesting thought of like what it means to, there's other things that, anyway, we'll come back to that with probably Evangelion about like what it means to be attached to like power sources and power structures and how
that sounds right. Yeah.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. So in that scene where he's having his dream and he's reawakening as a man from a machine, there are two scientists reading the newspaper. There's a couple things there, I think, that work at two levels.
Yeah.
One is this idea of negligence,
mm-hmm.
right? So, hey, is consuming the news negligence? Well, I can tell you that these scientists are not doing their job of watching Murphy and figuring out that he's having a bad dream and that he's no longer becoming RoboCop and he's becoming a man again.
Oh, no.
We also see the workplace negligence by the other scientists where they can't pull, they literally cannot fucking find cables to pull out to stop the other guy from getting shot in the boardroom scene, right? The other spot is where Emil, I'm still fucking saying that.
Oh, Emil?
Emil.
Yeah, yeah, that guy.
It's E-M-I-L, and I'm supposed to know that, hey, yeah, that I is an E?
Yeah. Bad news. English is a nightmare.
God damn it. Anyway, so Emil is robbing a gas station attendant, right?
Yeah.
And that gas station attendant is doing his college coursework.
Yeah.
While being a gas station attendant.
Yeah.
That's why I said, like, it's less to do with workplace negligence. There are some specific people who are not doing their jobs at the time that they are supposed to be doing their jobs. When is the right time for a gas station attendant to be doing his homework on the night shift?
Well, I think that is, again, hey, sometimes things are relevant even after the 80s. What happens if you're working in a system where you have no other time to study the thing that you're attempting to study to maybe allow you other opportunities outside of being a gas station attendant? If that's the only time that you can read these books, that's it?
Oh, you and I both have college degrees.
Indeed we do.
We both knew people who worked through college.
Indeed we did.
So, yes, obviously, those people are in bad situations, whether or not it's because they're doom-scrolling the newspaper, or if it's because they don't have time to finish their degree because they are too busy also working a gas station and making it work through college. The kid is also doing like advanced calculus.
Yeah.
Or is it just geometry? I don't remember.
I think it is and some sort of advanced geometry. It is he's doing fancy math.
Yeah, fancy math for fancy boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's something there for who RoboCop is trying to blame as a film. I don't mean Alex Murphy as a person, excuse me. But I think there's something for who that film is trying to blame. It's a weird sticking point because it's only these specific people. They're only supposed to be educated better than us elitists, right? Who are the ones who are negligent on the job. And I get that, you know. We live in Ohio. Like, I can understand some of that feeling and some of that conversation around those specific people. I just don't know if it's necessarily effective because the other repercussion of that is the guy working at the gas station, which fucking of course.
Well, like I think that gets to some of what might be the point of that particular thrust of the movie, which I think is that, hey, you can be smart and still get subsumed by the capitalist machine in ways that make you ineffectual. And that's still going to alienate you from your job, and that alienation is going to prevent you from being effective. But the person at the gas station, hey, your only avenue to not work at the gas station is still to try to get that education. So it's the capitalist, hey, the only way out of the most miserable situation is this, but also the situation you get put into is not going to be that much better. You're still going to be alienated. It's just like, how close are you to the lower classes?
I would feel like in RoboCop also, they don't do... I think the gas station attendant is there to be viewed as a class escapist, right? He's trying to... I don't know what the term for that is, but someone's trying to move out of the lower...
Yeah, I think that is very accurate. Like, and like escapist maybe sounds too harsh because I think it is like...
I don't know what the right word right, like, for that is.
He does want to better... He doesn't want to work at a gas station forever.
And I don't think even, you know, Emil, who's robbing him, is giving him shit too, right? Like...
Yeah.
He doesn't work at a gas station either.
Yeah.
He's too busy robbing people and gassing up his motorcycle and catching RoboCop.
Well, and like he has put himself in a situation where he is in many ways in a way better position than this person who's trying to
stealing money, buying coke, selling coke, getting more money. Free
enterprise, baby. Why would you learn geometry when you could just
Learn coke? Come on.
It's the 80s.
The boardroom's doing coke. The drug dealers are doing coke. The gun sellers are doing coke. Learn coke.
Right. I really do.
Also, let me be very clear. This is not an endorsement to do coke.
Culture of Fugazi. Not telling you to
not
do coke.
Not telling you to do coke. The 80s had a different
feel. The 80s
feel.
Was telling you to do coke.
We're telling you to do
coke. As a decade was suggesting.
Cocaine can solve a lot of your... Yes, a lot of people were telling you in the 80s that cocaine can solve a lot of your problems.
That scene with Bob Morton where he is with the two ladies all the coke in the world.
So, how the fuck did they cut this for cable? Because I know I've seen it on cable.
Yeah.
And there's a couple movies like Die Hard where it's like, okay, Mr. Falcon, whatever, you know, but like to get to where RoboCop ended up as a cultural icon took a lot of people a lot of fucking time to figure out exactly how RoboCop fits into this idea of what it means to be a sci-fi movie. Let's say RoboCop 2. So let's say early 90s, late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Post-Terminator. Not going to say the rest of that because I don't want to be wrong on my timeline. But
Sure.
But there's something for what the sci-fi movie turned into in the 90s.
Yes.
And it wasn't all sci-fi.
No.
But very much what the thing turned into was a spectacle, right? We had a lot of people using science fiction to tell interesting stories. And it's not that Terminator 2 is an uninteresting story. I would actually say Terminator 2 fucking rules.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm a simple man. But I also like Terminator 1, and I like what Terminator 1 has to say about people and corporations and what it means to be a part of a machine, and can you change your own destiny? Can you change fate?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the episode, and you and I talked about this before the episode. In the 80s, there were a lot of action movies that leaned into this just ridiculous aesthetic, but did that in service of attempting to make very, very incisive social commentary happen. And they had things to say. And on the one hand, you can watch those movies and just watch them for the action and watch them for the ridiculous spectacle. But if you want to engage with the subject matter, it is giving you more than enough to engage with. But a lot of that does get shaved off in the early 90s, where you don't get as much of that incisive cultural critique. And like we talked about before, the 90s was a much safer period of time for a lot of people. And they had less interest in engaging with some of the ways in which maybe things are not going great. Maybe society does have things to critique. You know, this is very much like we've reached the Francis Fukuyama end of history period where democracy has won and we don't have to worry about anything anymore.
Hey, Chris, can I ask a dumb question?
Absolutely.
Who the fuck is Francis Fukuyama?
Yeah, so Francis Fukuyama is a political...
Fukuyama, excuse me.
Yeah, a political philosopher who wrote a book called The End of History, which is largely about the fact that, hey, democracy is it. We don't have to figure anything out anymore as far as political controversy goes, because that is ultimately, and I think it largely comes after the Soviet Union falls, which is hey, communism is done now. And that was the only other viable political philosophical ideology that could have been an alternative. And we have proven that that doesn't work. So democracy is it. We solved it. We did it. There will never be a conflict around that again.
So it's like, you know, whenever you're playing Tetris and you got a Tetris set up and you got a long block and you're like, oh, fuck. And then you get that long block and you close it out and you're like, yes. So yep. That's it. We did it.
And then you're like, now Tetris is done.
Yep, we did a Tetris.
That is Fukuyama. And like other people are like, no, but what?
But you have to keep doing. You have to keep doing a Tetris.
Yes, precisely. Yeah, 100%.
Man, I can't believe I nailed that metaphor in one.
That's the whole thing with the '90s is like you get that sort of idea of we don't have to think about this stuff anymore because this is not important. There is nothing more to dig into here. Capitalism won. Democracy won. This is it.
And those two things are the same thing.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
100%.
We've never seen that contradicted anywhere.
Yeah.
A couple other things I want to get back to for RoboCop. Thank you for that, because I learned something, which was I need to read more books.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about the end of history more at some point. Not now.
Not now. Please, God.
You need to read the book first.
Yeah, I need to. I'll get right on top of that after everything else we have going
on. It'll be a nightmare. You'll hate every second of it.
So we got a little bit of a lightning round that I want to kind of move us into. And then we'll provide some extra literature and some closing thoughts. So, lightning round.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right. In RoboCop, the Star Wars satellite eventually misfires and kills two former presidents.
Huh.
There is obviously something there with the idea that workplace negligence is no longer negligence and that negligence is an excuse, right? The idea that we can put blame on accidents and cover it up is not new, but there's something that RoboCop specifically wants to say. It's already used accidents and negligence. You've seen it happen on a personal level. You're now seeing it as a large scale level as cover for corporations, right? I don't know. Is that making a point? Is there like a small point that with it killing two presidents that like really like rings a bell for you? Because I felt like it rang a bell for me.
So I think you already alluded to it. So Star Wars contracted out to corporations. We've already had a corporation tell you
that's the missing
thing
for me.
We're gonna make a bad thing so that we can just like get money out of people. The corporations, they so much control everything that they can murder two presidents with their stupid space laser and still come away winning.
Yeah, that's that missing point for me. Because I was like, man, I feel like if I was no harm, like never let me imply that I could write RoboCop better. So like never once. But I would say like that should have killed like a sitting House member. Right. Mm. Like it should have killed someone on a committee exploring if you really wanted to nail that point home. But in the 80s, two former presidents and an era where there was a couple back to back 4-year terms. Right.
Yeah. And also consider that like we are way more. This is something that I don't think is necessarily as clear to folks. We are way more familiar with like members of the House and Congress as like a population than a lot of people were in the 80s. So you couldn't have suggested that like, hey, this House member got murdered. And like people would be like, why do we care about the House? Like, why would we even, unless it was their own House member, which like then, yeah, they'd know. But that's not going to have the same sort of like valence as a president is now. 100%. Absolutely.
Chris, that worked perfectly. Thank you. Next lightning round question.
Go on.
What counts as lethal force to a cyborg?
What?
So, one of the things, Chris, I'm not a lawyer. You are not a lawyer.
No, we both know lawyers.
We both know at least a lawyer.
Yes.
If not, 2 to 3.
Yes.
This idea to protect and to serve.
Yes.
As a member of our civil workforce, right?
Yes.
They are supposed to be protecting and serving. The use of force is a very important. This is the end of February 2023.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not a better time for me to use the word fuck, I don't know when there is one.
Uh-huh.
But obviously, the use of force by police when they are and are not at risk, when the public is and is not at risk, is a very important thing to ask.
Yes.
In 1987,
yes,
RoboCop shoots a lot of fucking people because the person in danger is RoboCop. At one point in time, is the use of force by a cyborg who has Kevlar is nearly unkillable in multiple situations where he does eventually fire and probably kill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a 3-burst pistol, right? Like,
yeah,
that thing, they show that thing off in the shooting range to show how effective he is with lethal force. At one point in time, is lethal force by a cyborg, even with a human component, enough at risk to justify the use of force?
Yeah. So
remember, this is the lightning rod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the interesting thing here is that, like, ultimately, this standard comes out of the idea of qualified immunity, which I will reiterate that neither Justice nor I are lawyers. So we're doing our best here.
Yeah, we're two bottles of wine in. So
doing our best here.
Yep.
But this is the idea of qualified immunity that has essentially granted the ability to use lethal force with little to no ramification. And I think it's interesting because the case that I think really, from my understanding, nails this home as like a thing that police can use as a get out of jail free card for the majority of their police existence is Bivens, which I think happens in the 80s. I think it happens in the early 80s. And so that would have been before RoboCop. It would have been something that was already on the books. And so we're already dealing with like police brutality as a theme. And hey, police brutality is a thing that happened in the 80s.
It is not a new concept.
No.
Right.
No. So I think this does raise the very interesting question of if you have a cyborg cop, part of like the whole thing is, well, they don't have to eat, they don't have to sleep, but they never deal with they also don't have to worry about getting murdered by a perp from getting shot. So can you argue that they were afraid for their life in the way that you have to in order for qualified immunity to be something you can argue with? Can you argue that? I think, personally, that RoboCop can't.
I think RoboCop is a robot. And it's so hard to apply this, right? RoboCop, again, I would love to have someone who would know way better than us, and I'm sure this probably exists out there already,
mm-hmm.
someone picking apart every time RoboCop has technically broken the law, right? His idea of when he does and does not apply first aid to individuals, is that also him becoming more human? Because specifically that happens in his more human aspects. Is that what the 1987 idea of a glorified cop is?
Well,
at the time.
I think we're confronted with this even before that, where like when we first get introduced to the precinct, you immediately see police officers roughing up subjects. Consistently happening over and over. The chief roughs somebody up. So like I think the movie is saying to you, like, regardless of whether or not you're a robot, this is how the cops operate. And like that is one of the areas where like I think it is attempting to say that that's not good, but I do think that that is not quite as explicit an argument as some of the other arguments that are made in the movie.
I would say it's probably the biggest sin that 2014's RoboCop makes. Like, if you want to talk about a thing that a movie that is definitely in a situation to have a better point of view and to make a better point, could make a better point, 2014's RoboCop has a lot to say about drones and a lot to say about, well, I'm using the word a lot, and I mean to say... some It has whispered.
It is attempting to. It has thoughts.
It has thoughts. It does not have opinions. It has thoughts. It would like to say, eh.
It's gesturing.
Gesturing. So, last question of the lightning round.
Yes.
Can you fly, Bobby? Yes or no?
I mean, no, that doesn't go well.
No.
That doesn't go well.
Most people, Bobby, you cannot fly.
No.
That's why we throw you through a windshield.
Absolutely.
And I think that's going to do it for our thoughts on RoboCop. So your bibliography for today is RoboCop, 2014's film that's also called RoboCop, some ideas on RoboCop 2, and an episode of WCW Nitro where RoboCop saves Sting from a cage.
Yeah, very important. Yeah. I will say...
I think it's Nitro. I don't want to be wrong, but I think it's Nitro.
I'm gonna defer to you here. We'll say RoboCop 2014, Joseph Padilla, the director, and of course RoboCop 1987, Paul Verhoeven.
Verhoeven.
Who a master of satire, and I would say, if you are interested in viewing any sort of movie that engages interestingly with satire and politics. Turns out he does them pretty good.
If we wanted to do an entire thing about an entire thing and we wanted to spend like a whole
year
doing a thing. Oh boy.
Yeah.
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 Outside of that, we would like to thank you for listening to Cultura Fugazi, which is the podcast that you're listening to now. You can email us, us@fugazipod.com. That's where you can tell Chris and I your thoughts on RoboCop or the new RoboCop or whether or not RoboCop should have saved Sting from that steel cage on that episode of, I think, WCW Nitro.
Controversial.
Who knows? Who knows? Couple other things that I think we want to figure out. This might be the only episode you get this month. We're kind of busy. If you get another one, it will be a surprise to us too, so we don't know exactly what's up next.
Yeah, I do think we are getting a sense of some things that might come down the pike, and so we mentioned before that we'd love to give you some advanced warning of what we're going to talk about. I think there will be more ability for us to do that moving forward, but as we mentioned at the top, this was, hey, what are we going to do for the podcast?
Yeah,
you want to... Should we... RoboCop?
One of the things that we almost did, which has a very strong pool for the month of March, I'm not going to guarantee it, but they should have sent a poet, but instead they sent us to watch Contact.
Yeah.
So it's a very likely scenario.
Yeah.
We might watch Contact. That may... I'm not going to make a promise that I can't keep, but what if we watch Contact next week and just like pound out two? Anyway, well...
I love that movie almost as much as I love Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
And I think that that movie ties very nicely into a lot of themes that we want to explore as a podcast.
Yeah. So things that relate back to RoboCop.
Yes.
So a couple movies or things that you can consume.
Yes.
Chris has already dropped an entire book about how democracy do.
Yeah. Read The End of History. It is...
Just all of it? Or?
I mean, well, here's what I will say.
Quote, The End of History.
Yeah.
End quote.
That book, the book specifically, is a frustrating book to read if you know that the world is still... dealing with difficult things, but I think it is worthwhile to engage in the nonsense that that book has brought forth into the world, because it's informed a lot of people's thoughts that are important, like presidents and congresspeople and what have you.
I find it fascinating that you're recommending us read a book called The End of History in the same year that History of the World Part 2 is coming out.
One of those things is way more fun.
I'm just saying, this idea of like, hey, we ended it. It's over.
Yeah.
For now. And we'll come back to it later.
Yes.
Other things that I think are definitely in conversation with RoboCop are Starship Troopers, which
yes.
is going to be what I was going to read instead or watch instead of RoboCop 2014.
Yeah. Look, when I talked about having some good satirical things to say, that is exactly the thing that I was thinking of.
Yeah, if you want to talk about the rise of fascism, which yeah. we did not talk about the rise of fascism in the United States today.
Yeah.
Starship Troopers has a lot to say about that if you understand the context with Heinlein.
Yeah.
And specifically what that movie is trying to accomplish. There are very similar things. I mean, the man knows what he knows, and it's how to make a point. And he does not do so lightly or subtlety.
And it is delightful subtlety. What he does with the source material.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if you, he knew what he wanted to do, and he did
yeah.
it.
Yeah. If you know Starship Troopers, my God. And I think the last thing I'm putting in conversation with this is Fight Club.
Mm.
I think there's something to be said about a movie that has taken its points and had those points kind of reestablished to fit mm-hmm. specific details and mm-hmm. norms. And I think Fight Club is in a similar conversation, and it takes a specific eye, which is pretty much anyone who's watching that movie to watch that movie and not watching that movie to reinforce their current worldview
mm-hmm.
to really isolate and identify with what that movie is trying to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think it's in conversation with RoboCop. Because if you think, hey, a RoboCop is cool, and if you think a Fight Club is cool, mm-hmm. do I have two movies for you? But also, yeah. if you think maybe these are conversations about other things,
yeah,
do I have two other movies for you? They're
yes.
also RoboCop and Fight Club.
Yeah. Well, and I would say I think that gives you a good sense of alternatives or other things to do in relation to RoboCop. RoboCop 2014, I would say maybe instead of watching that.
Woof.
Yeah. Here are some alternatives there. I think Ex Machina has
yeah.
more to say about some of the themes that movie wants to deal with. And I also think, honestly, both of the Blade Runners, maybe even 2049 more so than the original, as far as the themes that movie wants to deal with. I think that those are better explorations of some of the stuff that movie it teases you with, and it just never really quite deals with.
Some other things about robots with a soul. 2001, A Space Odyssey. Mm. Obviously, that's a given. Mega Man X. Actually, I watched
yeah.
both these RoboCop movies
yeah.
and played Mega Man X. Hey, there's something there. But I think if you want any other recommendations, I would say email us at fugazipod.com.
Yeah.
Because that's going to do it for this episode of Cultural Fugazi. I was Justice. He was Chris.
Hello.
And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.